This is an iHeart podcast.
Did China install our president? Talk about that. Miranda Devine is going to join us to give us the latest and greatest on her interview with Scott Bessent. Maybe some foreign policy matters, all that and more coming up on I'm Right. Let's talk about the past, shall we? Not ancient history at all, but let's discuss something. Because I just want to rewind. Let's stay with me here. 2019. Remember 2019? Not that long ago, of course. 2019, Donald Trump was president. We'll go January 2019, the very beginning of 2019. Donald Trump is president. It's his first term, obviously. The economy is going gangbusters, absolutely gangbusters. And if you were anybody in politics who's experienced with politics at all, and you're looking at Donald Trump's economic numbers, just his economic numbers, you're thinking this guy's going to get reelected. And this, just stay with me, we're going somewhere with this. Presidents get reelected when they have good economies. It's just one of those things that is a rule in American politics. It's very, very hard to get out a sitting president, to have him lose his reelection bid. Once you're there, it's easier to stay there. But presidents with relatively stable, it doesn't even have to be going gangbusters, but pretty stable, solid economies, they get reelected. Can't get rid of them. But the economy wasn't solid by the time his reelection came around. What happened there? COVID. We got a virus. America got a virus. A virus that a bunch of quacky people, and look, Donald Trump himself participated in this, I get that, but a bunch of quacky people decided that the world's economy should simply stop moving in response to this virus. You see, it was a virus, and a bunch of people, scientists, doctors, really smart people, they decided that kids shouldn't go to school, you shouldn't go to work, restaurants should close. Of course, you can go buy liquor, but you remember all that, of course. Now, a couple things. Where did we get that virus? Where did it come from? China, okay? Where did we get the idea that shutting down a country on purpose was an appropriate response to a virus? Because do keep in mind, I know I'm not trying to rehash COVID here, but keep in mind that idea is completely bonkers and has been rejected many times throughout history. Yes, portions of your economy will shut down when there's a virus, when there's some kind of a sickness, but you don't ever point to your economy and say, stop moving. Hey, close your business. But that idea went mainstream during COVID. Where did we get that idea? Also China. So we got the COVID from China. We got the idea to shut down our economy from China. And now we combine that with some things that we just learned recently. Cash Patel, FBI Director Cash Patel, just put out a very, very interesting report. The report is that China had mass-produced fake driver's license, American driver's licenses. And they fake-produced those mail-in or those driver's licenses because they wanted Joe Biden to win the election. They mass-produced fake driver's licenses so people could send in illegal votes so Joe Biden could win an election. All this is already ugly, is it not? All this is already nefarious. But wait, when you dig into it, it's actually even worse than that, you see, because the report doesn't just lay out that China created a bunch of fake IDs for people to go in and vote illegally. The report also shows that the FBI destroyed the evidence of all that. You see, a bunch of people in the FBI came forward and said, hey, the Tri-Coms, we have a report right here. They're getting involved in the election. They're trying to defeat Donald Trump. And the FBI said, oh, that's great. Destroy all the evidence of that. Ignore everything you've seen. But wait, it's actually worse than that. While they were destroying the evidence that China was getting involved in the election to try to ensure Donald Trump couldn't win again, the head of the FBI was saying things like this.
The intelligence community's consensus is that Russia continues to try to influence our elections, primarily through what we would call malign foreign influence. But we certainly have seen very active efforts by the Russians to influence our election in 2020 through what I would call more the malign foreign influence side of things. Social media, use of proxies, state media, online journals, et cetera, an effort to both sow divisiveness and discord. And I think the intelligence community has assessed this publicly, to primarily to denigrate Vice President Biden.
Kind of cut off at the end there, so you didn't hear it, but to denigrate Vice President Biden. While the FBI, remember, he gave that testimony after we knew this, while the FBI was in possession of knowledge, knowing there was a Chinese scheme to get Donald Trump out of office, they knew it, they knew about the driver's licenses, they knew about all of it. After they had knowledge of it, they destroyed that knowledge of it and then went to the American people repeatedly and told the American people that Russia was trying to win the election for Donald Trump. It's not just that we could potentially be looking at China unleashing a virus to get rid of Donald Trump in the presidency. That's that it looks like the FBI and the intelligence community was complicit in that. I understand we're supposed to sit here every single night and talk about Israel and Iran, but I'm sorry, if our intelligence community, including the FBI, is joining with communist China to bounce the Republican president to get Joe Biden into office, that's kind of the biggest story on planet Earth. Now, let's combine that with some other things we know. Joe Biden and China. Now, if you've watched this show, if you've consumed any news from the right, at least over the last 4 years, you're aware of the connections, unbelievable connections. Let's first of all, let's talk about Air Force Two being vice president. When you are the vice president of the United States of America, I know you are not a king, I get that, but how other countries look at it is you are. You have an insane amount of power and money at your disposal when you are the vice president of the United States of America. So let's say I was Vice President Jesse. Don't worry, that's never going to happen. And I wanted to go visit Singapore. Never even been to Singapore. I don't know, heard it's a nice place. But let's say I wanted to visit to Singapore. I would go get on Air Force Two and I would show up to a king's welcome. It would be heads of state, red carpet, five-star hotels. Yes, Mr. Kelly, can we show you our finest landmarks? Yes, we've brought in only the highest quality toilet paper for you. When Joe Biden was vice president of the United States of America, he took a trip to China on Air Force Two. But he had a passenger. Not just the Secret Service, not just some reporters. Hunter Biden went along. And when Joe Biden walked off those stairs, hopefully he didn't trip. When Joe Biden got his red carpet, his heads of state, and he got in the cars with his big security detail and cruised off to do official business, Hunter didn't go along. Hunter went off and met with some business partners, if you will. The Biden family is so involved with China that Joe Biden's been having to answer questions about this for years.
China is likely to become a major issue in this election, in part because of the coronavirus. I think you've been critical of the way the administration handled China. The administration has been critical of the way you were, when you were vice president, were dealing with China. I guess I want to ask you, do you think that this is going to, in fact, be a major issue? And are you vulnerable on this issue at all because of your son's business dealings in China?
No, I don't believe so at all. My son's business dealings were not anything with everybody that he's talking about, not even remotely, number one.
Oh, well, that clears everything up. Remember on the heels of what we just found out about China, remember how often Joe Biden told us he and Xi, they were besties?
Fact is that I have met with Xi Jinping more than any other world leader has. I've had over 68 hours of private meetings, he and I, with simultaneous interpreters. I spent a lot of time with Xi Jinping when I was vice president and subsequent to that. And he once asked me in the Tibetan Plateau, could I define America for him? And I mean it sincerely, not a joke. I said, yes, one word, possibilities. I've allegedly met more face-to-face with Xi Jinping than any world leader has.
America is a nation that can be defined in a single word. I was in the foothills of the Himalayas with Xi Jinping.
Interesting, isn't it? And let's talk about what happened after all this. China unleashed a virus on the world. China did something to ensure Joe Biden got a lot of votes. We don't know how much it was, but China did something to ensure they got a lot of votes. The Federal Bureau of Investigation destroyed the evidence of that and then told America that Donald Trump and China were best friends. And then we all woke up, found out a bunch of ballots, some kind of ballots, got dropped at 2 a.m. and Joe Biden was the next president of the United States of America. And immediately after getting elected, he said this.
We know, you know, we have got to still reckon with the impact of climate change. That clean energy transition is not just coming, it is here.
There is no amount of domestic production that we can do when we're dealing with a volatile global commodity where the price is set globally. There's no amount of domestic production we can do to reduce or eliminate our vulnerability as a country to that volatility. The only way to do that is to reduce the energy intensity of the economy overall, which means shifting to cleaner sources of energy.
It is just not tenable. It should motivate us to accelerate the transition to clean energy.
Clean energy. Right away, we started transitioning. Biden said it, his whole cabinet said it, but who would you work with if you were going to try to do this fake transition to green energy? In fact, who would benefit financially from that? Janet Yellen, who would it be?
We are not attempting to decouple from China. We have a deep economic relationship, and that kind of competition, trade and investment, is beneficial to both sides.
Beneficial to both sides. Joe Biden got elected mysteriously, and Joe Biden promptly enriched China. And that brings one more thing to mind as we think about China possibly stealing the United States presidency. Remember that spy balloon? Do you remember it? It was a relatively small story, I guess. Didn't get all the headlines. We talked about it here, of course, but we detected a Chinese spy balloon over Alaska. So I'm not going to insult you geographically. You know where Alaska is. Way out west, way up north. There's Alaska. Pacific Ocean. We detect a Chinese spy balloon. Now, this is a spy balloon. It's not a spy hypersonic missile. It's not a spy satellite out in space. It's a balloon. Do you have any idea how easy it would be and safe for America to take a spy balloon out of the sky? Do you have any idea how rural the land is between Alaska and, frankly, the continental United States of America, if we're talking about the lower 48, let alone all the rural area it will go over around that part? It would be nothing. It would be like you or I going to the gas station for a pack of gum. That's how easy it would be to take out a Chinese spy balloon. And yet, the Chinese spy balloon was allowed to traverse the entire United States of America doing figure eights over our military bases, collecting God knows how much data, and Joe Biden allowed them to get from Alaska to the Atlantic before we shot it down. Interesting when you add all these things together, isn't it? All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We will talk to Miranda Devine about this and other things in a moment. Before we do that, let me talk to you about getting your energy up, your focus up naturally. We really shouldn't be grabbing for the coffee at 3 in the afternoon, right? As much as I love coffee, we should just feel good. You want to grab coffee, fine, but you should feel full of energy. You shouldn't be out of gas at 3 or 4 in the afternoon. And you know why you are? Your levels are off. But you need to handle that naturally. The highest quality natural herbal supplements I've ever seen in my life are from Chalk. Chalk, they'll hook you up. They'll get you a male vitality stack, a female vitality stack. They'll have you feeling like $1 million in 90 days. You want a big savings? Subscriptions? Chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Okay, so last week we interviewed Miranda Devine, which we love to do because she has some sweet new podcast called Pod Force One, and apparently she's just going to get all the heavy hitters on there, and she had a chance to talk to somebody who fascinates me. I've never met the man, never talked to the man, but he seems sharp. I wonder what Miranda thought about him. She interviewed Scott Bessent, joining me now, wonderful columnist for the New York Post, Miranda Devine. Okay, Miranda, you had a chance to sit down, take the measure of the man. What'd you think?
I think he's a wonderful man, and we're extremely lucky to have him in charge of Treasury. As the most powerful global financier, you could not ask for a better pedigree, a better background, track record, brain, temperament, you name it. We are extremely lucky. This is the guy who broke the Bank of England, made $1 billion in a day from doing that. And, you know, you can't blame someone, the financiers, for doing a good job of exploiting the, mistakes that a government makes. And what now we have Scott Bessent on our side, he's going to make sure that no one can exploit the United States and that we always get the best end of the deal, which, of course, is Donald Trump's aim as well.
Miranda, I get the impression, given how often I see him on television, how often Scott Bessent is sent to negotiations with other people, I get the impression that Donald Trump thinks extremely highly of him and trusts him a great deal. Do you get that?
Definitely. He respects him enormously. And, in part, that's because the rest of the world respects him. He just proved himself over and over. He made billions in what he was doing in trading in the stock market. And he also just has proven himself now. He's a professor. He's, understands everything there is to know about the economy. Stanley Druckenmiller was his mentor. So he's at the perfect stage in his career when he can step back and now apply all that knowledge he got in the real world to fulfilling Donald Trump's policy aims. And as you said, just last week he was there in London, neutral territory, to try and reset the China trade relationship, which had really gotten ugly and out of hand, and there was retaliation on both sides and effectively an embargo on trade. So he managed to do that and at least reset them, and now they're set for proper trade talks. So yes, Donald Trump is trusting him with a lot of things. He even sent him to Ukraine, if you remember, to negotiate that rare earth minerals deal with Zelensky, which didn't go too well. But that obviously was Zelensky's problem, and he showed the same attitude when he came to the Oval Office. And Scott Bessent was there as well. So he's right at the heart of everything, that the government does. And he was in the Situation Room with Donald Trump. He told me all this Iran drama. And he did say he couldn't obviously talk about what was going on, but what he did say is if the American people could see the way President Trump conducts himself and the way he's talking to international leaders, etc., they would feel very comforted by the fact that he's doing such a good job.
You brought up him, Scott Bessent, I'm sorry, in China. And, well, this is a little snippet of all that.
You just recently flew to London to have some pretty willing trade negotiations with the Chinese. And I think this was just over the sort of retaliatory measures that China had slapped on America. For instance, magnets and some rare earths they had put a ban on, and then we'd slapped some payback to them. And so did you manage to sort that out? And do you think that we're going to get to a point that Donald Trump has said he wants where China opens up to America?
Well, on the whether they'll open up, we'll see. I believe that Chinese were feeling more pain. Their system takes pain better. But I believe it was probably very painful for them because that we import three times more than we sell to them. So we are the deficit country in the history of trade wars. The surplus country always takes more pain.
And their economy is not doing very well, is it, at the moment?
You know, they're in the middle of a real estate downturn. Some might call it a crisis. Mm-hmm. You know, they've had low growth. There's something called the middle income trap for developing economies. And what we will see with China is, can they be a reliable partner?
Miranda, I played that because I wanted to gauge how adversarial the Trump administration actually is with China. And I asked that very much on the heels of this report from Kash Patel that the Chinese were highly invested in some way in making sure Donald Trump lost his election to Joe Biden. And we don't know how much they played a role in that. We don't know if they actually got the presidency for him, but they did something, or at least they attempted to.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? What we're hearing now about the sort of Chinese malevolence. I mean, just the other day, the FBI picked up, I think, three scientists who were trying to smuggle in some really awful biologic agent to sabotage our agriculture, I think some sort of fungi. And so, I mean, that's frightening. I don't think that the Trump administration is under any illusion that China is, you know, our friend. And certainly the way that these trade negotiations have been going, China thought that they had snookered us because these little rare earth magnets are in like practically every motor and, you know, quite a strategic problem for us. But by the same token, you know, we played hardball, the administration played hardball back, and 250 of their planes had been grounded by the time Scott Bessent and Howard Lutnick met with them in London last week. And they were being grounded at the rate of 250 a week because America just said no more aircraft parts for you, China. Marco Rubio was saying no more Chinese students. Howard Lutnick, Commerce Department, had put a ban on a substance, a petrochemical called ethane, which is a crucial element of plastics, which of course a lot of stuff out of China is made of plastic. So, you know, two can play at that game. And I think that was a bit of a wake-up call for China. And they do, you know, I'm told that the negotiators, they sent their vice president, a guy called He, there, and they're all very respectful, particularly of Scott Bessent. I think they realize that it's a new sheriff in town and no more of the sort of weak attitude. And really, I mean, it's Joe Biden, for the millions of dollars, tens of millions that he and his family raked in from China. And the fact now we're seeing with this new FBI revelations that China was trying to manufacture some fake ballots or, you know, fake driver's licenses to get fake votes on behalf of Joe Biden. You can tell Joe Biden was China's man. And that's no longer the case. And so I think what Scott Bessent told me was that the administration is looking to do a strategic decoupling from China. You can't do an entire decoupling. You can't totally isolate in this kind of globalist economy that we have. You can't completely isolate from China, but you can ensure that they never again have the power to withhold something like rare earth magnets from us and, you know, threaten our national security and our economic security. So that will never happen again. And he blames previous administrations for allowing that situation to happen. I asked him, you know, about allowing China into the WTO back in 2001. Should people have known back then what a disaster it would have been for American jobs? And he said, look, the problem that Larry Fink had told him is that it was capitalism without guardrails. You can't have that. So they're trying to erect the guardrails again.
Miranda, I appreciate you. It is Pod Force One, everybody. All right. We have a lot still. Hang on. The Supreme Court met today. A bunch of people are talking about it, but these are legal matters, therefore they go way over my uneducated head, so we better bring in someone who knows what they're talking about. And that brings us to Alex Sawyer, author of a wonderful book, Lawless Lawfare. She's a reporter for The Washington Times. Okay, Alex, first and foremost, who's Scrimeti, and why do I need to know this person?
You need to know this person because he's the Attorney General of Tennessee, and he went to the Supreme Court earlier this year defending a state law that basically says youth that are looking to transition cannot have puberty blockers, they cannot have surgery. The goal of the state was really to protect youth from the unknown of this, the long-term effect of this types of drugs. And that was met by challenges. The state law was met by challenges from three transgender youth and their family and a doctor, basically saying that that type of law violates the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution and that it's sex discrimination. So during oral arguments, which I will say was the most attended oral arguments of the term, going back to COVID before the audio was released live, usually the courtroom was packed, but now not so much since people can listen to it remote, but this one drew all the attention for the term. And it did seem like the AG, the Tennessee AG, had a better day in court. So I wasn't all that surprised with today's ruling, which basically upheld the state law in a 6-3 decision and said, yes, the state of Tennessee can have this law. It's not sex discrimination, according to the majority. They're saying this law is looking at age. It goes by age, that there are these medical treatments available to adults. And, you know, also the fact that the treatment is based off of a gender dysphoria, the actual diagnosis. So, you know, children can still get puberty blockers when appropriate, but not to treat gender dysphoria. The dissent, the three Democratic appointees dissented from the ruling, saying that this puts transgender youth in danger, that they could have high rates of anxiety and suicide from this. So they were very disappointed with the way the court went. What they wanted was the court to send this back to lower courts and say that the state had to meet a higher burden, essentially an intermediate scrutiny showing why it was justified in passing this type of law.
Okay, let's switch gears and talk about a federal judge blocking Trump's order mandating biological sex on passports. I can't believe we even have to fight things like this in this wacko country of ours now. But this is surely going to get shot down, right?
Yes, I foresee it will get shot down on appeal. The judge has made this now a class action. We are frequently seeing Biden appointees like this issue these nationwide injunctions or temporary restraining orders that is looking to strike down policies. So this was a policy out of the State Department saying that we recognize biological sex, no more X on your passport. You could see that there's a national security reason for that. So I do believe that as this works its way up the chain, courts will rule for the administration. They typically do defer to the executive when it comes to matters of national security. And when needing to identify someone coming into this country, it would be helpful to know if there's a male or female, not just an X. for identification.
Yeah, it certainly would. Okay, so the culture war stuff. The Supreme Court, especially our side, has been much maligned and justifiably so for all the ways they've screwed things up. But they appear to be pretty solid on the cultural issues that keep landing in front of them. Am I wrong?
You are not wrong. They have this 6-3 majority, and with the exception of really, we're not always sure where Roberts and Barrett will go, but for the most part, they have been delivering wins for conservatives. Now, I'm not sure, in the next biggest case we're waiting for this term, it's really the birthright citizenship case. And for your audience, basically the case was about President Trump's move to end birthright citizenship. And that's really when a child is born on U.S. soil, but the parents are not U.S. citizens, that child is then given U.S. citizenship. And the president has looked to end that. That was challenged and it was blocked, unsurprisingly, nationwide. And that's really the issue that the court took up. The Supreme Court is weighing whether these lower court judges have the ability to basically have a sweeping injunction that blocks the executive policy nationwide, rather than just for the parties that brought that case to the district court or in the jurisdiction in which it's brought. There are some concerns, obviously, when we're talking about matters like immigration, having fractured court opinions and the idea that there needs to be some uniformity in how they're enforced. But which court that should be left up to, I think, is where the justices need to direct that opinion. Maybe provide these lower court judges with a test about when it is appropriate to issue such a sweeping nationwide injunction. So I think that might be the type of guidance we get from them in the next week or so.
Okay, Alex, so forgive my stupid question, but you're dealing with the uneducated here. It doesn't sound to me like you're talking about the Supreme Court actually ruling on birthright citizenship or not. That doesn't sound like what they're going to rule on, so we're all getting ourselves worked up into a tizzy over nothing.
That is true. It is the Supreme Court. So could they say something about birthright citizenship? Sure. But the issue they actually took up out of the petition of this case was centered on the issue of nationwide injunctions and if these district courts have the ability to issue them. So what we're really waiting on is guidance in that respect, which is a bit more procedural than the actual merits of what you just mentioned. Can the president end birthright citizenship?
Okay, Alex, finally, the FBI leaker, everybody remembers the Dobbs decision was leaked beforehand, and then the animals took to the streets and death threats and assassination attempts and all the things we've grown used to in this country. Did the FBI ever track that person down, or is he hiding right next to the pipe bomber from January 6th?
Yeah, might be hiding. I think you're right on that. I think the reason the court didn't invite the FBI in to do a thorough investigation there was the thought of wanting to keep the executive branch agencies out of the judiciary, for better or worse. I think a lot of people want some sort of accountability there. It was such a grave mistake, and it has, I think, continued to deteriorate the trust in the judiciary and made it look all that more political. That's something I get into in my book, Lawless Lawfare, about the loss of the trust in the court system. It's looking more and more like political battlefields than a courtroom.
No, no doubt. Alex? Best of luck. Hope your book does well. All right. Democrats keep pulling crap to get them elected. That's what I say they're doing. They're getting arrested, but they're trying to get elected is what they're trying to do. We'll talk about that in a moment. First, let me talk to you about something much more important than that. We're talking about my YouTube channel. Have you subscribed yet? It's free. No one's charging you for anything there. You want these little videos, little highlights, things like that? Just go take your little phone and scan the thing and subscribe. All right? We'll be back. All right. Let's talk about the Democrat Party getting arrested, getting elected. Let's talk about human beings, you know. human beings, we copy successful behavior. It's why social media is big for this now. Do you have social media? I'm not recommending it if you don't, but if you have social media now, and let's say you're trying to get in shape, maybe you're trying to get in shape, what are you going to do? You're going to go follow a bunch of accounts of these fitness freaks, and they're going to show you what they cook and their workout plan and whatnot. We're looking and we're learning. We're looking at what works. Look at that dude. He's got six-pack abs. I'm going to go do what he's doing. Oh, look at her. Her legs look great. I'm going to go do what she's doing. Politics works in the exact same way. Political parties, politicians, they study each other all the time, and they try to figure out what works, what doesn't work. And the communists in this country, oh, sorry, Democrats, the Democrats in this country discovered something wild. You see, they grabbed all this political power. They took over the university system. They got a bunch of billionaires, foreign and domestic. They did a whole bunch of things. But the things they did had given them incredible political power with DAs, with attorney general, with the FBI, with the DOJ. They woke up one day under Joe Biden. They had a cadaver president who wouldn't hold them back from their worst impulses. And they said, we have everything. We have the FBI. We have prosecutors. We have... Why don't we just arrest everybody we don't like? Why don't we just use all this power on our political opponents, and then we'll be set for life? Communists always think in this way. They always operate this way. And so they did. And what was crazy was, as Democrats were sitting there arresting Donald Trump, arresting January Sixers, prosecuting, doing all these things, all these crazy things, they very clearly in the moment, at the moment, they thought they were winning. Every time Trump got elected, remember when he got arrested. When Trump got arrested in Georgia, remember when they put his mugshot up online? Ah, ha, ha. Remember when Joe Biden even tried to dunk on him? Hey, I hear you're free on Wednesdays, when he was in the middle of his New York trial. When Joe Biden and the communists put Donald Trump in particular through all this ridiculous legal lawfare, at the time they thought, we're getting him, we're getting him, we're getting him. But something else was happening. And because they live in this horrible bubble, they didn't realize it at the time. There was a primary in the GOP. Remember that? No one hardly remembers, but Donald Trump had a very formidable opponent. I believe he probably would have always beaten Ron DeSantis because Trump's the most popular Republican in the country. But that was within 10 or so. It was closing. Country was looking at DeSantis, liking what he said, liking what he'd done. Donald Trump got arrested. I don't think it was ever within 30 points again. Boom, gone. And the Democrats tried to excuse that. Okay, whatever. The GOP, their base is crazy anyway. Bunch of extremists. Surely the general election voter will be bothered. And so they all started running on, he's a felon. He's a convicted felon. Look at this. You're going to vote for a felon? But it wasn't just the GOP primary voter. The American people watched as those savages kept arresting and prosecuting their political opponent, and every time they did, Donald Trump's poll numbers went up, 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 up. Now, you're a Democrat today. You're sitting around post-election. You've lost the presidency, the House, the Senate, and you're wondering what happened. I don't understand. We arrested him. And very, very clearly, the light bulb, bing, has gone on. Getting arrested on camera by your political opponents, it's good for business when you're a politician. Makes the people feel like you're one of them. Helps keep you in office. Why do you think a United States senator charged the podium when Kristi Noem was speaking?
I'm Senator Alex Padilla. I have questions for the secretary. Because the fact of the matter is, a half a dozen violent criminals that you're rotating on your heads off.
Hands behind your back. Hands behind your back.
If you let me see my hands, go ahead. Turn behind my back.
All right. Cool. One hand. Lay flat. Lay flat.
Other hand, sir. Other hand.
Why do that? If you're a senator, there are a million ways you can get a hold of Kristi Noem. He wanted it to happen. Now, he's on the Senate floor, fake crying about the whole thing.
I was forced to the ground. first on my knees and then flat on my chest. And as I was handcuffed and marched down a hallway, repeatedly asking, why am I being detained? Not once did they tell me why. I pray you never have a moment like this. But I will tell you, in that moment, a lot of questions came to my mind.
Oh, please, you got handcuffed for 5 minutes. It happens to everybody. I've been handcuffed a couple times. It's really not that big of a deal. What's he trying to do? He's trying to get elected again. That's currency now. He's not alone. This has caught on. This loser, Brad Lander in New York City, has no chance in this mayoral primary. He's up against Cuomo. He's up against this weird foreigner. I can't say the guy's name. But Brad needed a little positive pub. So what do you do when you need some positive pub? You get arrested.
Please step back.
Where are you taking him? Hello?
Since you have no authority to arrest U.S. citizens.
Where are you taking the controller?
And with what authority?
Why are you arresting the city controller, and where are you taking him? No!
Number one's gonna go with him, all right? Hang on, where's number one? Hold on. Brett.
They're all trying. Why do you think Gavin Newsom has been all over the television set since all this ICE stuff in LA began? Why do you think Gavin Newsom has been practically begging to be arrested?
Tom Holman, the border czar, said to me yesterday he did not rule out literally arresting you,
yep,
nor Mayor Bass,
yep,
if you interfere in his words. He said you hadn't yet.
He's a tough guy. Why doesn't he do that? And he knows where to find me. But you know what? Lay your hands off 4-year-old girls that are trying to get educated. Lay your hands off these poor people. They're just trying to live their lives, man. Trying to live their lives, paying their taxes. Been here 10 years. The fear, the horror, the hell is this guy? Come after me, arrest me. Let's just get it over with. Tough guy. You know, I don't give a damn. But I care about my community. I care about this community. The hell are they doing? These guys need to grow up. They need to stop. And we need to push back. And I'm sorry to be so clear, but that kind of bloviating is exhausting. So, Tom, arrest me. Let's go.
That's a man trying very hard to be the Democrat nominee in 2028. Trust me, it's not about 4-year-old girls. All right, let's go make fun of Whoopi Goldberg, ungrateful witch. Next. All right, it is time to lighten the mood. And there is just something that grates on me, but at the same time, it makes me laugh. That's why we're doing it, for lighten the mood. Is people, especially feminist types, but really any people, who luxuriate in this country and talk about how horrible it is here all the time. Either no perspective at all, or they're lying. I remember I went to Europe. I haven't been to Europe a bunch, right? But we went to Europe as a family. We wanted to go see a couple things. And of course, we go during the summer to get out of Houston, because Houston's miserable in the summer. We go there to cool off. We're Czech Republic and Austria. And of course, the biggest heat wave they've ever had hits as soon as we get there. So it's roasting. In the 90s, it's hot. And I remember restaurants, hotels would advertise on the street if they had air conditioning. It was so rare that it was the selling point to walk into a restaurant. Here in the United States of America, wherever you happen to be watching me right now, unless you're out mowing the grass, you are in the air conditioning. We have everything here. And yet we have so many brain dead feminist hags on television who say things like this.
I think it's very different to live in the United States in 2025 than it is to live in Iran.
Not if you're black.
Not for everybody.
Not if you're black.
Guys, don't go to Tehran. Do not anyone at this table should go to Tehran. Nobody wants to diminish the very real problems we have in this country. That is no one's intent.
Good.
But I think it's important we remember there are places much darker than this country and people who deserve rights.
Not everybody feels that way. Not everybody feels that way. Listen, I'm sorry. You know, when you think about the fact that we got the vote in 1965.
They don't have free and fair elections in Iran. It's not even the same universe.
They can't go out of their house. The women.
There's no way I can make you understand.
Let me try something. Try to reverse roles with a black person in this country, let's say, because I think that's what you're talking about.
Yes.
Just try to understand from their point of view. From that point of view, this country does not do them well, does not go for them.
There's no way I can make you understand. No, I understand perfectly well, you communist, ungrateful hag witch. I understand perfectly well. You want to remain at the top of the victim ladder forever because it serves you quite well. That's what I understand. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.